Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, also known as NASCA. My name is Tammy Schopstall. I'll be your host tonight, and I'm also a survivor of child abuse. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and it's a pleasure to be here. Tonight's show is an open mic question and answer, discussion show, and we know folks stream in, so if you'd like to join us tonight, we could really use the support on the show, and I think you will find it very, very comforting and friendly as well. That number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contribution. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we would really be grateful, and it's also tax deductible if you choose to do so. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address related childhood abuse, trauma, Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. Sorry about that, guys. We do so from two perspectives. We educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Here at NASCA, we're fighting for kids and serving adult survivors. Be aware, be a voice, be a hero, be brave. Like I said, tonight's show is an open mic show, question and answer discussion. It's an open mic forum. Tonight, our special guest and co-host is Dr. Niecy Hamilton. Dr. Hamilton is from Houston, Texas. She was born to an adolescent mother who had herself been sexually trafficked and by an extended family member at the age of 11 to 13. When she was born, she was left at the hospital. Where she was born is still a mystery to this day. And in foster care, Niecy was abused starting at the age of 14. She was considered aged out of the foster care and lived in an empty apartment owned by the housing authorities until she was officially kicked out of the property at the age of 15. Homeless, no family, no food, no shelter, and no one to call mom. Today, she is a proud activist, motivational speaker, coach, and a lifestyle influencer. Dr. Niecy Hamilton I teach young girls and women how to not come into agreement with the spirit of poverty. So Dr. Niecy, I am very, very excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us. Before I introduce you, I want to introduce Mark, who is the other caller that we have, and he's also my trailer. He's calling in from Louisiana. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
Oh, good evening, Tammy. I'm doing just fine. Clear weather here and sunny.
Oh, good. We've had nothing but rain. Of course, we're going into the hurricane season as well. Hurricane season started officially June 1st, so it'll go on to November.
Oh, yeah. We already had a tropical storm go through New Orleans already.
Oh, absolutely. We've had a couple of them as well. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate your support and trailing as well. I see we've got another caller from 931. Let me go ahead and open
Darlene.
That mic. Is that Darlene? Darlene is from Tennessee.
Yeah.
Darlene, is that you, my dear?
Oh, yeah. I can curtsy to you all.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for the support. We need some voices here on this show. I really do appreciate you being here. And I know you're calling in from Tennessee.
Yeah, big state of Tennessee.
Well, right now we got a boatload of Southerners. I'm in South Florida, but I'm originally from Georgia. We have Dr. Hamilton, who is calling in from Texas. We might have Mark, who's calling in from Louisiana. You're calling in from Tennessee. So we have a southern bunch here tonight. So I'm sure the accents will be flying left and right.
Yeah, people make fun of my accent, but I've tried to sound a little bit northern now. Let me try to change it.
Oh, don't try to change it. Embrace it. I tell you, I'm in South Florida where we have a lot of Northerners, and it's a commodity for me. They love it, and I love it. So
hey,
I'm proud of my Southern accent.
You forget I'm a Northerner, really.
Oh, are you? Oh, we got one Yankee on here.
Pittsburgh, he
don't
sound like a Southerner.
No,
okay, but you're in Louisiana. Okay.
I live here.
All right, well. There you go. Well, right now we have Darlene from Tennessee, Mark from Louisiana, Transplant from the North. If anyone would like to call in, please do so. The number is 646-595-2118. And without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Dr. Nisi. Good evening, Dr. Nisi. Thank you for being here.
Good evening, Tammy and Mark. Oh, my God, it feels so good to be here. I've missed you guys since last month. When I first came in, we were in the great state of California, and I was calling you guys from L.A. And today, I am from Houston, Texas, you guys, but today I am calling you from the great state of Georgia in Atlanta. So I am happy to be here and happy to share some advice, some experience, and be a great reward to our viewing audience and our other survivors out there that are rooting us on. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. Are you on a speakerphone by any chance?
I'm actually on the headphones. Am I echoing?
Just a little bit, but, you know, it's okay. I mean, if that's – it's okay, but, you know, it's not as clear as it could be.
Is this better? I'm talking to you on speakerphone now.
No, speakerphone is definitely not better. Probably the headset was a little bit better.
Okay, let's go back to the headset.
Yeah, speakerphone really sounds like it's in a distance. But the headset's fine. We can go with it. Well, Dr. Nisi, it's a pleasure to have you here on the show. Thank you for your support and your help in NASCA. And you are our guest speaker, our professional guest speaker. So what I like to do is turn the microphone over to you and see if there is something, you know, something that's on your heart or a theme that you want to get us started with. The mic is yours, Dr. Nisi.
Well, yes, ma'am. Tonight's show, I wanted to talk to everybody about foster care and human trafficking. I want to send a special thank you to the University of Houston attorneys and professors for inviting me to talk to their L1, 2, and L3 students. There might have been some L4s in there, some people that were getting ready to graduate from law school, and really just hit the nail on the head with some things that were unconstitutional as far as new laws that need to go into effect to protect our children and how human trafficking is affecting the foster care system and things like that. So I really thank you guys at University of Houston campus. You guys were wonderful, the professors and the teachers. But nevertheless, it is still a much-needed conversation and something that we definitely need to get, you know, just really just nip in the bud, foster care and human trafficking. So does anybody have any questions so far?
I'm sorry, what did you just ask?
No.
Okay, but you guys can hear me good.
Yeah. I don't have any questions yet.
Okay, did you get me? Okay, great.
Okay, well, you know, I'm looking at your bio, and what an amazing woman you are to come up with that. Did you have any, have you had any contact with your mother since? I know that she gave you up, I mean, later on in life, or did she ever reach out to you, or that's still a mystery for you?
No. So my mother, she's deceased right now. And so we never got any answers to what happened, how it happened, why was there such a disconnect during that time. But I could tell you a lot in the African-American community, you're a young black girl and you get pregnant, then you are automatic, you know, you're independent. And you're left to do things on your own. And it's typically because you bring in an extra mouth to feed in the household, or the household cannot be carried by you or by an extra person that you're bringing in. So it brings dysfunction to the ecosystem that's already trying to function within itself when you start having children at a very young age, especially during that time.
Right.
Now, you know, I have my children. My oldest son is 17 years old now, and he has a kid. So I'm 33 years old with a grandma. I'm a 33-year-old grandmother now. But things have changed for me because I'm positioned strategically way better than my parents were, or my grandmother. I only had one parent at that time. My grandmother was back then. So having a child 20 years ago, you know, you couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were left to make decisions on your own, live on your own by default, just because it affected the ecosystem of the household. And I'm sure I'm not the only person that's happened to, you know, this story is cataclysmic to the African-American culture. And that a lot of that, I mean, I can't say that a lot of it stems from slavery. Just a lot of it stems from during that time, you know, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, women were learning how to be an authority in the household. They were still, they were just learning how to become teachers. They were learning how to become nurses and learning how to become attorneys, because typically a lot of jobs that were outside of the realm of a woman having that job, that meant that all those jobs were meant for men. They were entitled to men. So men were the breadwinner and the women were the caretakers. And so as history goes on, you know what I mean? So that was the culture. And I don't think that constitutionally that our laws reflected the changes that were happening in society. I don't think they reflected societal changes, especially when in reference to different cultures and to different communities.
Okay.
And so because it remained the same, we were affected by it.
Right. You know, as society, as women, and as different races as well, you know, it's easy, especially today, because it's in the, and I don't want to get off on that subject at all. I just want to make this comment. You know, it's easy for us to look and say, you know, we have this going on, and there's things that will never go away that we may fight for, you know, forever. But when you look back in how cultures were back in, like you said, the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, we've come a long way as women,
right.
You know, as a society. I mean, we really, really have. And, you know, you're right. Back then, the woman's place was, you know, was in the household. If you look at some of the commercials, if you look back at some of the advertisement and the commercials they had in the 50s and 60s, oh, my gosh. Right. How in the world could they have something like that? But it was common. It was you know, people didn't question it because you don't know what you don't know. So we have come a long way, but hopefully we can start coming a long way in the survivor community as well, whether it is trafficking or abuse. You know, we know the statistics that we have, you know, how much of the abuse comes from the family or a loved one or a neighbor. You know, we know that 90% of the children know their perpetrator, and 67% of that is a family member. And the other 33% is somebody, you know, a coach, a neighbor, you know, somebody down the street. So we've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. Trafficking
Absolutely.
Is something that we've gotten our foot in the door just a little bit. You know, society, you know, they don't want to talk about incest. They don't want to talk about,
right.
you know, stuff in the family, but they've gotten a little bit better about talking about trafficking because they view it as that happens to the other person. So that's my thought on that. Denise, I want to make sure that the panel is able to stay involved, so I want to go and see what their thoughts are. Darlene, what do you think about all this?
I think right now, also with the border being open like this, so many people are being trafficked, and you know, because I heard a lot of news from over there, you know, at YouTube. I listen. I don't watch regular fake news, but we won't go there, right? But that happens too often, and we have been wondering here in Tennessee, because there's been some that's been dropped off without any kind of adult supervision or anything, but just dropped off in the state. And so we don't know what's really going on or where they came from. And now some Baptist places try to take care of them that I know of, and they said it's still one of the boys did come and say that he was sexually abused. And but the lady is trying to say that he was probably abused in that thing, you know, in that where he just came to, but he might be talking about, you know, on his journey, you know, from Mexico to here, you know. And that's a sad situation, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't want to focus in on the news. I don't want to get political, but you're right. You know, we can't ignore the fact of the child trafficking that is going on today. You know, whether it's people coming across the border, you know, being cow-tied to some of these cartels, or in our neighborhood. You know, I have a friend, and I won't mention her name. You know, her mother was a drug addict, and when her mother needed drugs, she would go to her local dealer, and she would trade her daughter. She'd leave with the drugs. She'd leave my friend. The guy would throw her into a dark closet, and that's where she stayed. I mean, she would trade her for 6 weeks at a time. I mean, the girl had to stay with the guy for 6 weeks at a time in a closet, and the only time he brought her out was to bathe her, abuse her, and throw her back in the closet. And, you know, he would throw some food in there. And that was her life. And about, you know, she wouldn't even know how long she was in there, whether it was day or night or whatever the case may be, until her mother would come back to pick her up. And then she would do the time frame. I mean, this is a, you know, a 10, 12, 14-year-old girl. You know, it happens. It happens. And that was her mother who was trafficking her out, you know, trading her for drugs. And
yes.
To know this person, you know, now she's got herself together. You know, she's married, she's past it. You know, her brother, one of her brothers, committed suicide. But you know, it's just a broken family. And you know, when it happens, and it does happen, you know, the best we can do is try and break the cycle. Like Dr. Nisi. Dr. Nisi has broken her family cycle. You know, and that's what we try to do here. You know, me and my sister and I, we've tried really hard to break our family cycle. And that helps. I mean, you know, Dr. Nisi is, and her son is just one, you know, one in the pot. But me and my sister and I are two more in the pot. And, you know, Darlene breaking it, that's three in the pot. And the pot just kind of grows. And that's why what we're doing is very, very, very important.
Yes.
So,
and it's so, and Tammy, thank you for bringing that up. I just want to say, and you're right.
Sure,
but the pot of the abuse is getting larger. So I just want to point out some disturbing factors. So just in 2019 alone, we have over 51,000 missing children that were in foster care that were missing. 51,000.
Wow.
And so out of that, 53% were females and 47% were males. And so if we kind of look at the age group that I came out of, which was that 11 to 14 is where the practice of abuse, the grooming process of abuse, the dismantling my mindset, teaching me outside norms that were not congruent with what I was taught in school versus what was happening to my body or to my person in the outside world. That 11 to 14, that's about 23% of our kids. 23% of that 51,000, that 11 to 14%. Even if I go and do the math on that, that's almost 12,000 children from the age 11 to 14 that are being groomed during that foster care system, that pipeline to trafficking system that we're losing every year because the abuse is not being seen for what it is. The voices are not being heard. The trauma's not being dealt with. And we are continuing to allow the government to substitute parental rights or substitute parenting for children who are abused or for children who have been sex trafficked, for children who have experienced domestic violence to themselves or from their parents.
Hey, can I say something?
Absolutely.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I was trafficked myself. They had groomed me in, I guess, since I was basically a baby, I would say, because I can remember my mother, when my first memory was her put me on a table where the guy, you know, did something to me, and I had to lay there still while he did that, or don't squirm, or whatever. But I can remember other times before that time that she would take me to like a restaurant, and I was thinking, cool, special treatment. I'm here with mommy alone, you know, I get special treatment. But then all of a sudden a guy might come up and say, she's a doll, she's cute, you want to buy her? Some of mama will sell me to complete strangers. And then I was, you know, they took me off and they said, just bring her back alive, you know.
Wow, mighty God.
So, you know, when the last time I had talked to my mom was 2001 or 2002, and I was trying to, you know, get, you know, forgiven her or whatever already, but I was trying to, you know, make amends and have a mom, you know what I mean? And her first words was like, are you showing your naked body to men, or are you prostituting yourself out? I said, no, Mom, I'm an adult. I have a choice now. And then she asked me that again, and I said, no, Mom, I'm an adult. I have a choice. She said, well, you were born to be a prostitute. And I wished I would have killed you when you were a baby like I wanted to. And so I hung up, you know, and I never talked to her again. But since she passed away, and then one of my sons was mad at me because I kind of like kept him away from her.
Right.
Wow.
But I thought it was the best thing. You keep it away from somebody gets sick, you know.
Absolutely.
Well,
I think you did the right thing because, you know, first of all, Darlene, I know a lot of your story. I've heard a good bit of your story throughout the years, and no one has a right to define you that way. She was wrong. She may be your mother, and she gave you life, and I understand that, and I respect that, but that doesn't mean she gets to determine, you know, what you're good for in this life. You're a beautiful soul. You're a beautiful human being. You're cherished in the Nazca family. I can tell you that right now. And she did not have a right to tell you that. She was wrong. Don't ever accept that. And for you not to expose your son to that, he may not realize what you sheltered him from and saved him from, but in your heart you know you did the right thing. So just,
right, exactly.
Just know that.
Absolutely. I want to make sure Mark has a chance to get involved. Mark, is there something you want to add to this? Or what do you think about all this, Mark? I don't want to leave you out.
Well, I feel bad that Darlene went through all that. You know, Pam and I have heard her story too, like you said, and it's just a shame that, you know, a mom would talk like that to her child. I can't fathom it. I just can't grasp hold of that. It's just evil in my mind. But I'm sorry that you had to bear that. But I think you did the right thing too by keeping your son away, because that lady to me is a monster, and you don't need to put him in that activity, that venue there. But I think you did the right thing, so feel good about that, you know, and that you protected him, really. He might not agree with you, but you did. You protected him. But
right.
On this, a little bit, I don't know much about trafficking, but from what I've heard on the show here in this past month, different people have been. But I know that, you know, Pam and I went a couple of years ago to a seminar in New Orleans, and they had not only the New Orleans PD down there, but the sheriffs, and they also had the FBI. And the FBI was the one that was telling us about, you know, how a little bit how traffickers work. And they, in that time, they were mostly finding them in the big cities along major interstates. And the reason, he says, because they could snatch the kids or do whatever, jump in a car or a van, and be across state lines, you know, quickly. So that's why the FBI was always called in, because they were across state lines. And they said they were just warning people to be aware of you who are in the big cities along major interstates. And, you know, and back down there, it's I-10, and that goes clear across to Florida all the way to California. So, and through Houston too, Dr. Nisi, you know, we lived in Houston many years, and, you know, I just would just tell people to be aware along those major, major interstates, because, you know, there is grooming going on, but they also do snatch and grabs too.
Right. Well, you know, Mark, one of the things I'd like to point out, you're absolutely right. Child trafficking and trafficking in general, they have a lot of that in the big cities, and you're right that they can use the interstate to traffic them back and forth across state lines. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I 100% agree. But trafficking happens. It happens everywhere. One of the things I'd like to point out to anyone who may be listening, child abuse in general is not. It's across lines. We cannot identify it to rich, poor, black, white, Christian, agnostic, Muslim. It doesn't matter. It's across the board. I have talked to people who were black. I've talked to people who are white. I've talked to people who are Muslim. I've talked to people who are Asian. I've talked to rich people. You know, some of the stories that I've heard, you know, they were rich. They were poor. There are no boundaries to child abuse, and child trafficking is one of them as well. However, you're absolutely right. There's easy prey in the cities. A lot of times, like the story I told you about with my friend, you know, that's a little small town, and I would venture to say that Darlene probably grew up in a small town as well. Am I right about that, Darlene?
I grew up mostly in a country, but there was some towns like when I was 2 years old, I lived in one of the places I lived in Orlando.
Okay. Yeah, and Orlando's large. You know, I'm in Florida now, so it's across the board. You know, for anyone who's listening, understand that it's evil. Mark hit the nail on the head. It's evil, no matter who's doing it. You know, whether it's a family member. And one of the things that we have to be really careful of is don't let people define us. Dr. Nisi didn't let anybody define her. Look what she has accomplished. And, you know, Darlene, even, you know, trying to have a relationship with a mother and make amends, you know, be more hatred at her. Mark is a normie, and we love, God love Mark, you know, because we need our normies. We need our support. You know, he supports a survivor, and that's important. So, Dr. Nisi, what do you think about all this? May I throw the mic back your way? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I'm just sitting over here, just my heart goes out to Darlene. Darlene, you are definitely a survivor. You were not born to be a prostitute. I love you. You are my sister, and I am just, oh, my God. I wish I could just jump through the radio and just give you a big old hug. I mean, because, my God, you went through a lot. But to address Mark, you know, human trafficking is a serious thing. So human trafficking is the sale, it's the exploitation, it's the purchase for power, money, or sex. It doesn't have to be an exchange of offer money. It can be for either one of those things. And there are different types of human trafficking, for sure there are. And people do traffic people through the interstate. Sometimes they do arrive on the back of trucks. Sometimes they come through planes. Sometimes they come through cars. Because typically, you know, people are not treated as people. They're treated as cattle. And they come in herds. And they're kept like cattle in herds. It's a billion-dollar industry. And a lot of the people that are behind human trafficking are some of the world's greatest power players, people who take stock in our political reform, people who write our laws, people who, you know, not all the time are they gangbangers, you know, or not all the time are they thugs and things like this. A lot of them may not be guerrilla-type pimps, but they may have a guerrilla-type attitude. They might have a mafia style of collecting girls or trafficking young girls and young women as well. And we have several different hubs that are attractive to these type of men, to these type of men who like to, you know, be in controlled environment for this type of, to express themselves with this type of predatory behavior, which are strip clubs and other hubs, you know, oh my God, yeah. Sometimes your regular wine bar can be a hub. Sometimes a cigar bar can be a hub. A massage parlor can be a hub. You know, there are a lot of different places. Recently, we've seen nail shops become a hub for victims entering into labor and human trafficking.
Absolutely. The one thing, and I 100% agree with everything that you said. That's a really good explanation. One thing I would like to point out, though, is not just women; it's boys. You know, I've talked to male after male.
Absolutely.
After male after male, who has been, and people look at that and the shame, you know, the shame that's attached to, you know, boys who were sexually abused and sexually trafficked, you know, is just as bad. We had a guy on here; he was a young gentleman. My gosh, I can't remember his name. He was on here for a couple of shows. Pamela brought him on. And he was telling the story about, you know, how he was trafficked. And then once he got, you know, once he grew up and he discovered he had some looks, his self-esteem was so low. He had a girlfriend, but he would go out across town and he lived a different life. He would he began trafficking himself out. He basically picked up where those people left off because of his self-worth. He's an amazing young man right now, but to hear a story like that, our founder Bill is is a victim. And I don't want to tell Bill's story, but you know, he was passed from person to person in the Catholic congregation. So anyone who was listening, we understand that it's men, women, boys, girls. It's trafficking is horrible. With us, you know, focusing in on child abuse and the adults who survived that, it's across the board. I see we've got another caller, and I see the name is Brandy from Maryland. Thank you, Mark, for adding that in there. Good evening, Brandy. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fabulous. Welcome to the NASCA show. We have Dr. Niecy Hamilton with us. She's amazing, so thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Well, I know
hey,
you
Brandy.
Just joined us. Yeah. Hey. I know you've just joined us, so what we're talking about is trafficking and child abuse in general, and we'll just continue with the discussion. I would like to remind everybody the mics are open. It is an open mic forum, question and answer. The only thing that I would ask is before you speak, tell us your name so we know who's talking. You know, this is Tammy talking. I should tell myself that because I haven't done that tonight. And that way, you know, especially as we have our panel has grown to just introduce yourself. You know, this is Brandy, and then starts talking, or this is Darlene, and that way we know who's speaking. So, Darlene, what do you think? Let's go back to you. I want to make sure you're involved as well. What do you think about what the discussion so far, Miss Darlene?
Well, I want to thank everybody for their support, Mark, you know, for being there, kind-hearted and all. And I know he feels what was said. But, you know, it doesn't bother me like it used to, okay? So I'm fine with it because the only way that I can look at it is that it's okay now is to say, you know, my story can help others. So that's the only way I can look at it as it being okay. You know what I'm saying? But it's not okay that things happened, but now that I'm not going through that no more, my story might help someone else. And I had a thought also, there's so many kids, too, that run away from home, and then they go on the streets, and they trust somebody who might be, you know, seem like they're kind or something, and then they start pimping you out, you know? Start abusing you and stuff and trafficking you and do whatever they want to. I want y'all to be careful and know to be safe. And please, if you need somewhere to go that you, if you are being abused, you know, there's 1-800-4-A-CHILD. Call that number, please. And please don't get yourself in a dangerous situation, even more dangerous than normal, you know.
Absolutely. Well, and you brought up a great point, Darlene, about your friends pimping you out because definitely familiar with that process. A lot of times before children are human trafficked, they are labor trafficked. And labor trafficking is something that we keep sweeping underneath the rug. It goes unchecked and goes untalked about a lot. A lot of times we just, you know, we only see one facet of it, which is, you know, our restaurant industry or our hospitality industry being the focal point of labor trafficking, where people are hiring illegal immigrants to work for little to no money. Or, when you think of labor trafficking, what comes to mind a lot of times are our Asian community people working in sweatshops for little to no money. And still not guaranteed jobs, positions, or people who are just out here really trying to get their, you know, immigration status, something we don't consider people that are marrying American people for green cards, which is abusive and not okay, not ethical at all, so and illegal by every facet of the way, but those things all fall under labor trafficking. And one of the ways that, you know, I even got traded by three different pimps is because of labor trafficking. I remember right after I had Justin, I was in a predicament where, you know, I needed to make money. And I needed to make money, you know, legitimately, because I wanted to keep my kid. I mean, I wanted to be a mother. I didn't have, you know, my oldest son to not be a mother and things like that. And I remember, you know, being told that I had aged out of the foster care system and that I was not even allowed, you know, to receive any type of support services at that time. And, you know, I run into a homegirl, and she goes, well, hey, I'm working at a club as a waitress, and, you know, you can do the same thing I'm doing. Use my ID, go work at this other club, and, you know, you can make money working as a waitress at the strip club, and everything will be fine. I use her ID. I'm working at the strip club as a waitress. I come back home, you know, 3 days in. And, you know, and I'm making about $75 a night. I'm new to this. I'm not really, you know, into serving wait staff, you know, type of mentality. This is all new to me. Brand new. I've never, you know, seen the work industry move this fast or been around, you know, naked women or seen that type of money hand over fist in one space before. And I'm still a child at this point. I'm survival mode has kicked in for me. And, you know, by the fourth, fifth night, you know, her boyfriend goes, well, hey, I'm keeping your kid. You can't get your kid back unless you're paying me $200 a night. And so, you know, survival mode goes into, okay, I'm afraid for my life. I'm afraid for my kid's life. And if I don't do whatever it takes to get this $200 a night, then I'm never going to see my kid again. And there's no way. You know, there's nowhere for me to go to tell anybody to report this to the authorities. It's not like he's doing anything illegal as far as, you know, him making me sign paperwork to say that I have to pay him $200. At this point, it's just his word against my word type of thing. So there was no actual proof, but I couldn't get my son back. So how do you manage a conflict that big at 15 years old while fighting the state of Texas for your right to parent your child because you're homeless? And so, you know, that was huge. And right there, that labor trafficking that happened to me. And I mean, I did that for quite some time. And so when you look at $200 a day, just in 30 days alone, that's $6,000. That's
wow.
$6,000.
Somebody
could keep my kid from me. Yeah. Yeah. Thank
right.
you guys for the sentiment. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Nisi, for sharing that with us. You're absolutely right. There's all kind of trafficking out there, and you just gave us a really good example of human labor trafficking. You know, and you said something about the hotel industry. Well, I was in the hotel industry. I'm actually in hospitality now. I work for a private club. But I remember one of the hotels that I worked at, I got room, and I was the controller, and I got rumor of it, and I addressed it. And, of course, I was told that it stopped and blah, 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 blah. But the one, it was the maintenance guy. He had some illegal folks on his payroll. And when he doled out the paychecks, he told them that they had to give him a cut. You know, every paycheck they had to hand this dude cash. And of course, when I got there, I started investigating it, and I was told, well, you know, that's just a rumor. You know, that's not happening now. And I made darn sure it didn't happen. This was at a high profile hotel in on Palm Beach, needless to say, not West Palm,
wow.
Palm Beach. Yeah, I mean, and that's a high profile hotel. Like I said, it's not just in the flea bags. It happened.
Florida is special. And I totally believe you. You know, the Epstein case came right out of Florida. But Florida and Texas, still to this day, you know, you're 14 years old. And unlike, you know, Darlene's situation, you know, where her mom said, you know, you're born to be a prostitute. This is what you're going to do. You know, at 14 years old, you can still be labeled and arrested for prostitution in those two states.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, you know, the state of Texas and Florida has what I call a lot of sticky ethics when it comes down to protecting our children, protecting our children's life, and just, you know, protecting their bodies and making sure they have a safe space to call their home, such as their city, such as their county, such as their own household.
Right. There is no such thing as child prostitution. I mean, child prostitution does not exist. It's child trafficking.
Absolutely.
And a lot of
people
don't get that.
Absolutely.
Child rape.
Yes, exactly. Well, let me give Brandy's heard a little bit of this. Brandy's calling this from Maryland. Brandy, what do you think about all this? Are you with us?
Oh, I was riding, listening. That's why I just got it on speaker. It's heartbreaking, and I never experienced it, but I'm here for others, and like I'm here to support Nisi. But it's so heartbreaking, and it goes unnoticed and uncovered, and it's just sad. And what really got my attention of all this, probably like 2 years ago when the little girl walked in a freezer, like little crazy stuff, and I see like the government doing stuff, and I'm just like, wow. And then the meet Nisi and all that, so it got my attention.
Okay, so you and Dr. Nisi know each other?
Yes.
Okay, my printer just went off. Excuse me. I'm so sorry. Let me walk out of my office.
Yes, we
well,
do. Yes.
Nice.
Well, so I will support her if I can any way necessary. I'm all for helping people and standing behind them.
Well, you know, I think Darlene had mentioned that, you know, she didn't deserve what she had. But she's come to peace with it. And, you know, what happened to me, I wasn't child trafficked, but I do have, you know, my own sad story. Hold on, I think my printer has stopped. I have my own sad story. And, you know, I wouldn't be the person that I am now had I not gone through what I went through. I didn't deserve, like Darlene said, I didn't deserve what I went through. But, you know, I wouldn't be on this call. I wouldn't know you guys. So I'm a firm believer that, you know, we can make a difference. You know, it's terrible what happened to us. We didn't deserve that. It should not have happened, but it did, and I can't go back and change it. So, but we can help others. Like Darlene said, she can, you know, her story can help somebody else. You know, we can make a difference in this world. And that's what I wanted to ask Dr. Nisi. If, you know, what advice do you give people as you come across that are dealing with some of the things that you've dealt with, or they tell you what happened to them, what kind of advice, and anyone who may be listening, because we know we have people who stream in, what advice can you give people who may be struggling with this to move on and, you know, heal from it?
Absolutely. The first thing I always tell them to do is to deal with the facts. And the reason why I say deal with the facts is a lot of times when you're trafficked, you are so oppressed that you become depressed with the narrative that the trafficker is teaching you to believe about yourself. And if somebody's calling you stupid, then there should be some type of proof of stupidity. There should be some type of proof. Like if somebody says something about you and there's no proof, then let's focus on the facts. Let's redirect that. The trafficker is saying you're stupid because you're not doing what he wants you to do, not that you're not stupid because you aren't capable. Okay? And that means exercising independence. I have to always go back in and teach my girls how to exercise independence. Because a part of being trafficked is having a slave mentality. Codependency is a benefactor to trafficking. When you're codependent, you rely on everything it is that that trafficker is doing for you, to you, through you, because that's the world you know. And in order to break the cycle of abuse, you must operate with independence. Because when you're independent, you can think for yourself. You can rationalize for yourself. And you don't have to wait for somebody to think for you in order to do something. So you break that cycle of that slave mentality. And then I always tell my girl, you know, because I love God, I cannot do it without him. I won't get too much into it, but I just, for me personally, I cannot do anything without God. I'll say it like this. Anything that I have defeated, I can be delivered from. Deliverance is key. Deliverance is key. You have to set yourself up to be a freedom fighter in this. You have to set yourself up to catapult yourself, catapult your voice. And what I mean by that is this is when you go beyond human extremes and you operate with insensitivity to bravery. That means when you get all that nervousness in you, all of that fear that rises up in you, and you're sitting up there thinking about whether or not you should do it, and you contemplated on it too long, and you're thinking, you don't know whether or not you should do it, and now if you should do it turns into life or death, that means you need to be brave. That means you have to have an undefeated mindset. You have to be fearless because your life is dependent upon it. Your life, you know, people always say, you know, you have to live with your decisions. You don't have to live with your decisions. You have to live with the consequences. It's not the decisions. For my younger kids that I talk to, my 11, my 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, up to 20-year-olds, that whole middle school and high school students, I tell them all the time, I said, listen, you're born looking like your mother and your father. You die looking like your decisions. And so I always tell them that to get them in a mindset of reformation, to get them in the mindset of having a great understanding about what it is and what it means to be protective of yourself, to be protective of how you treat others, and be protective of how others treat you. You can't teach kids at the last minute how to create a defense mechanism against the world if while in the house with you, you know, you're beating the crap out of them, you're teaching them things they shouldn't be learning, you know, you're trafficking your children, you know their uncle looking at them the wrong way, and you let the uncle babysit them anyway, I've seen this in my family where they've had bad experiences with an uncle when they were little girls, but then when the next generation would grow up, which would be my generation, we're allowed to be around those same uncles. And I'm like, well, you knew you had a bad experience with them when you were a child. Why would you allow me to be around them as a child? What would make you think that the perspective changed or that they changed? And so I just think that as times have changed and times have moved forward, we have to liberate our girls. We have to liberate our boys. We have to help them understand that they have a voice and that their voice matters and that how they think and what they feel matters, and that it's okay to be heard and that we should be listening to them and that we do care about the way they feel. I grew up old school, and when we grew up, we were not allowed to think or feel a certain type of way. Neither were we allowed to bring up to our parents how we felt about something. You bring up a feeling to your mama, you know, mama, well, I felt, you know, you about to get hit. You know, you better back up a little bit before you roll up in that conversation, because the first thing that's going to come out of her mouth is, you know, all these things that I've had to do for us to get here, and you're going to come and tell me how you feel, how disrespectful. Now, we're in the 21st century, and we're in the heart of it. We're right in the thick of the 21st century with these new age kids. We got our Generation Z
in our Generation A's that are coming through, and they're like, no, our feelings are everything. Our feelings are going to rule the world, and how I feel matters, you know, with everything. And when we're not listening and when we're not paying attention and we're patting everything on the back and we're passing everything over, and these children are like, listen, I have a voice. I'm liberated. I'm ready to talk about the things that are hurting. You may be still stuck in the 1950s where you weren't allowed to talk about the things that were hurting you because back then that era was taught if something's hurting you, sweep it underneath the rug, or we don't talk about that, you know, we don't talk about that at the dinner table, or we don't talk about X, Y, and Z and things like that. You know, that's a type of freedom. And these kids, they know it, they feel it, they see it, and they are living witnesses. And what they're saying is what we won't do, their lives are being affected by it. And because we refuse to do it as parents, as educators, as teachers, as liberators, as freedom fighters, as survivor leaders, as advocates, as humanitarians, as philanthropists, the things that we won't do, the things that we refuse to do to make sure our children's rights are not being violated, to make sure that their bodies are not being violated, to talk about the things that were violent to us in our bodies and our minds, and to do that when we don't do it and we just let the world pass by. When they start seeing the things that happen to us happen to them, the way they deal with it will not be the same way we chose to deal with it. And so that lets me know that the seed of leadership has changed. And so I will end with that. Leadership is not the same as effectual leadership. You could be a leader. Pimps are leaders. That's the reason why they're trafficking our girls. They are leaders. They are leaders who need to be exposed. But they have a leader mentality. They don't have to have a gamut. They don't have to be chauvinistic. Not all the time are they Romeo pimps. Not all the time are they a gorilla pimps. Not all the time are they strong. Sometimes you can have a simp. You can have somebody who just like baby like figures. They like girls who act like little babies because that's just them. And they care too much about what they think and all this other kind of stuff. And they'll play into that because emotionally, that's what they need. We're not dealing with that. We need effectual leadership, people who are willing, just like all the viewers from NASCA, all the child abuse victims, the ones that, like Ms. Darlene, strong enough to say, listen, this is what happened to me, and I refuse to let this be the solution or the type of relationship that my son is going to experience with me. I love that about Ms. Darlene. She's fearless. I have no idea how old she is, but she sounds like a really strong, motherly, southern woman who likes to cook cornbread and eat milk and put it together. You call it mush mush, and we happy. Like, that's Ms. Darlene to me, you know? Ms. Darlene eats mush mush in my mind, and she has baby cats, and she's a nice lady, and she's going to knit you a hat, you know, every winter and send it to you for Christmas. You know, that's how I see. I really wish, you know, that those primal instincts in us, that we could go back to that, because, you know, when we hear grandma, you know, I just mentioned I'm a 33-year-old grandmother, you know, our primal instinct doesn't allow us to see or culture for me to fit anywhere because of my age. You know, I'm cast out, so I have to wait till I'm 45 in the African-American community to speak about being a grandmother because my age doesn't match my experience. And we have to get out of that because that right there, that affects leadership. It doesn't make for effectual leadership, that thought process. It just affects leadership because you'll counsel me out right here. Because you will not see the use for me over here. And then that generation will miss information because you misused me in the wrong way. It's just no different than NASCA putting me on the radio right now. NASCA saying, listen, Our viewers are older. They old school. You know, but we want some new blood. We want to hear from Dr. Nisi. She's 33. We're going to get on here. We're going to talk about it. We're going to do what we got to do because we want everybody to be privy of this information. What if Master said no? Then that right there would have canceled out other people's ability to be able to hear different perspectives from people who survived the same things they survived at different ages. It don't just happen in your 30s, and it don't just end in your 50s. It don't end there, and it don't stop there either. And so that's why I love Ms. Darlene. That's why I love you, Ms. Tammy. That's why I love Mark and Ms. Pam. Thank you, Ms. Pamela Lockridge and her husband. They're awesome. That's why I love Brandy. Thank you, Brandy, for calling in. And all the listeners, we have to exercise effectual leadership because the pimps are counting on us not working together so that they can continue to use the things that we have as an advantage that is really at a disadvantage to them against us. We got to stop weaponizing each other against each other because that's what the pimps are using to gain access to our
right.
children.
Man, that was absolutely awesome. Thank you so much. I got a lot out of that. I hope everybody else did too. Some amazing, amazing advice for anyone on this panel or anyone who may be Skyping in as well. Skyping might be an old word, streaming in. I love that, and I love what Darlene said earlier, and it plays into what Dr. Nisi just said. When her mother said the mean thing, she said to her, and she's like, no, mother, I have a choice. No, mother, I'm an adult, I have a choice. No, mother, I'm an adult, I have a choice. And we sometimes don't realize
right.
we have that choice, you know, because they beat us down. You know, like Dr. Nisi said, they tell you you're dumb, you're stupid, you're worthless, nobody else will want you. You know, when they pick these girls and boys up off the street, a lot of them are runaways. What was it, 51,000 foster kids are missing? You know, they go from an abusive home. They're strapped, you know, just, taken from the home. They go to a foster care. Not that all foster care is bad because it's not, but a lot of them are. And then they run away from the foster care and they find themselves on the street and hungry, cold, tired, ready, you know, beat down, and this person comes up to them and shows them some love and tells them they're going to take care of them. And that's the thing, you know, people are starved for love, so somebody tells them I love you, and I know what we just said it on the show, but that's from the heart. I'm talking where they're using it as bait, you know, I love you, I'll take care of you, come with me. And then they give them a lot of times they'll give them, a short period of time of love and affection and feed them and clothe them and buy them gifts. And next thing you know, they're being trafficked out. And then, you know, then they have to deal with that. And then how do they keep them? You know, they beat them down. You know, you're dumb. I took you in. You were worthless. You know, nobody wants you. I took you in. I'm your only choice. And they feel like that they're trapped. And they don't have to be, you know, as an adult, once you get out of there. Now, some people, you know, they don't get out of it. But the ones who try to get out of it or do get out of it, you have to have a different mindset. You know, you have to love yourself. It sounds easy, but it's one of the hardest things to do in the world. When people have told you how dumb, stupid, worthless you are, and then you start believing it. It's hard to picture yourself smart, worthwhile, worth investing in. But we have to. We have to believe in ourselves. We do not have to let these people define us, no matter who they are, whether they're a mother, a father, an uncle, abuser, someone who has groomed us or someone who is trafficking us. We don't have to accept their definition of who we are. And it sounds easy, but it's not. And, you know, with me, someone like me who has struggled with self-esteem, you know, I've gotten to a better place, but I still roll back on it. You know, I rolled back on it about 2 weeks ago. So that's my little spill on that. The mics are open,
okay.
So if anybody would like to make a comment on what Dr. Nisi said or my little rant, the mics are open. Go ahead.
Darlene, I would like to. Okay. You had said, And what we're describing, too, is also the core beliefs that we were taught that was ingrained in us. We're worthless. We're no good. We deserve whatever happens to us, da-da-da-da-da, you know. We got to learn to get over that and that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Don't give up.
Would anyone else like to comment? The mics are open. Mark, excuse me, Mark, we haven't heard from you lately. You're welcome to chime in, or
well,
Randy.
Sure.
Go ahead, Mark.
This is Mark. After, you know, Dr. Nisi was sharing all what she was sharing, and, you know, she teaches these young folks, you know, all this stuff. I remember someone said it on Asking, I think it was Carol. She says that predators and pedophiles don't like educated children, especially, you know, with about child abuse. And so the more that we teach, the more that we share, the more that we make it available to learn, you know, that puts a little wrench in some of their stuff, too. And that's why the NASCA site has a lot of good information on there. And for anyone listening to check out, you can find all about prevention, intervention, groups, recovery groups. In fact, you know, Darlene has supports a recovery group, and on Sunday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. And the education is what is, and I think that's what, you know, Dr. Nisi's doing, teaching these young folks, you know, for themselves to be better. And, you know, that's good, because the more educated even the child is, and to watch out, you know, the predators and pedophiles don't like that. They don't like educated kids. They want those kids that will listen to them and say, oh, you know, like you guys were sharing, you know, they feel no self-esteem, and someone comes along, starts telling them, oh, I love you, you're good, and, you know, I'll take care of you. But they're really not deep inside. They're grooming them. And, you know, but an educated child would know that. They could see that. And that's what I think we do here at NASCA. We teach. Dr. Nisi's sharing and teaching and helping kids and young adults to, you know, get past all that and to understand what's really going on.
Yes, sir. They could go to the pages, and there's the phone numbers, different contacts, if anybody likes to call and talk to any or needs to.
Absolutely. Well, you guys make some good points there. Mark's right. If anyone wants to go to naasca.org, we've got a wealth of information out there for folks. You're not alone. We're here. We are a NASCA organization. We are a NASCA family. So thank you. Thank you for your share. We have about 20 minutes left. Does anybody else have a comment on what we've talked about so far, or something else that might be on your heart that you might want to bring up? Go ahead.
Mark,
is that Dr. Nisi?
Mark Brett.
Darlene?
I'll say something right quick. Mark brought up the NASCA group that's on Zoom that meets on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. It's a part of NASCA. You know, it's not my group, it's Bill's group, but I go in there and make sure everything's running smoothly most of the time, you know. But I'm the host on Tuesdays. By no means, I am not, you know, like king or queen over it, you know. I'm just trying to make sure that the group goes smoothly, you know.
Sure.
Well, Mark.
Go ahead, Mark.
I just wanted to say, you know, I wanted to shout out to Dr. Nisi. I said, I'm glad that you came on tonight. And, you know, it's your experience as a young lady, and then your education, that is, we need people like you to share, that's been through it, but then has the knowledge and stuff to share with others who don't know. And you know, you're putting a dent in it, and I applaud you for that.
Oh, man,
Absolutely.
Mark, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much.
You know what's going through my mind right now? We've talked about some heavy stuff.
And I really appreciate what Dr. Nisi has shared with us, that here she is, 15 years old, having to, you know, make a living, thrown into an adult situation. We've got a little bit of background on these guys. Being put into an adult situation and having to get out there at 15, work in a strip club, and then having to go to, you know, somebody's house, then they're keeping your kid and basically holding your labor, $200 a day over your head. You know, that's horrific. But, you know, when you're in a situation like that, I mean, what is the alternative? To be on the street cold, naked, and hungry, you know? And I know it's bad, but it also, it's better than being cold, naked, and hungry, you know, up against the building, not knowing where you're going. Now, it is bad, and I'm not trying to, please don't misunderstand me, because, you know, a lot of folks don't know what to do. And, you know, that's what you had to do to survive until you found a way to get out of it. What kind of programs can society come up with to reach out to these kids? What can we do to help the kids, you know, that don't have to make the kind of tough decisions that Dr. Nisi had to make so her and her baby didn't have to be cold, tired, naked, and hungry on the street? You know, what programs do society need or have that, you know, where do we go as a society to help those 51,000 kids who have run away and on the street and have no alternative but to be, you know, exploited by some person like what you described? Any thoughts? Am I out in my field, or Denise? Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Something
can
happened.
Can you guys hear me? Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear
you. Can you hear me? Okay. We did lose Darlene. I don't know what happened. Something happened. Maybe it was my phone. Did y'all hear anything of what I ranted?
Yeah. I did.
Okay, guys, wait a minute. I just went out for a couple seconds. I heard you guys speaking, and then I was saying hello, and I didn't hear anything. Can you guys hear me talking now?
Okay, yeah, I can hear you, Dr. Nisi.
Okay.
I guess
it went out.
The gist of what I was talking about was, you know, going back to the story you gave us, you know, being 15 and having to deal with all that. And, you know, as bad as it is, you know, what was your alternative? You had to do what you had to do to survive until you could find a way out. But, you know, what can we do as a society to help? You know, what programs do we need? How do we rescue those 51,000 kids that are on the streets trying to survive, you know, being exploited by the person like you described? What can we do?
Absolutely. I think what we need to do is have more than just a national hotline for our survivors and victims of human trafficking. I think we need to come together collectively and bring our resources together, such as the housing, you know, the RTCs, which are residential treatment facilities that are around the United States. So let's say, for instance, if we get a call in to NASCA because somebody's listening to the radio show, and they're like, hey, you know, you should call Miss Pam, you should call Miss Tammy, you should call Dr. Nisi and see if they have some resources for you. We will have access to, you know, somebody in Florida, somebody in Texas, somebody in Louisiana who can assist these young kids further, so that they don't have to be on the street, so that they don't have to be violated or be in the position to continue to be violated because there's no adult there trying to manage their conflict for them.
Right, but like NASCA, you know, we don't deal directly with the kids. You know, we support trying to, you know, the prevention of child abuse and the awareness of it, but we deal directly with adults. We don't deal directly with children. So we would not be a resource for those children, but what is? You know, are there programs out there? I mean, I'm not aware. You know, are there any programs that you're aware of? You know, if I'm 15 and I'm on the street and I have nowhere to go and I'm on the streets of, you know, of Florida, you know, what programs have society, or what programs do we need to help these children, if any? I mean, because it's either the street, next to the building, cold, tired, and hungry, or, you know, this fool comes up and, you know, says, I'll love you, I'll take care of you, and next thing you know, you'll be in traffic. What is the answer of society? Maybe there isn't an answer at this time. I don't know.
There isn't an answer at this time. No, there isn't.
You know, and I think that's what society needs to understand. It's real easy to point their fingers over there and say, yeah, they're this, that, or the other. But what have we done to help them?
Right.
So, I mean, you know,
I wish I could say what services are happening in each state. I know in Houston alone, we have a plethora of services from Shared Hope to the YMCA to, I have so many running through my mind at this particular time. I know a really great impact partner, and she's like a mama bear to me, Jennifer Holman with the Houston 20, has an RTC set up in Houston right now for young girls. You have Redeemed Ministries. You have Hawk Houston Area's Women's Center. So many friends I could think of. Stephanie and Child Wynn that are out there doing what needs to be done for not just children, but for women as well.
Right. When I lived in Columbia, South Carolina, we had some facilities that would, you know, help children in crisis, you know, like, what's the name of them, advocacy centers. But there wasn't a whole lot for the children. There were a few shelters for girls, but here's one thing that I've noticed with society, and the girls are important, I understand that. But society seems to have forgotten the boys. And it stuck out to me, Dr. Nisi, when you said, you know, maybe it was when I read it that said, you know, you were aged out of the foster care system at 14. How do you age out at 14? You know, and then, you know, the boys, I mean, think about what these young boys go through. These boys are in a traumatic situation, having difficulty in their foster care, whatever. There's nowhere for them to go. I mean, it's the street or gangs. And that's why the gangs take these in. That's why these child traffickers and these gangs are just, you know, having a heyday with our children, you know, because the gang members will take them in. And we did open a facility up for boys for that specific situation, because there was almost nothing in the state of South Carolina for boys. But even the home that was opened up, there may have been 10 beds. You know, that's 10 kids that are getting help. But of all the boys in South Carolina, and that's just one state, there were 10 beds. You know, and there were very, very few programs. You know, no wonder these boys end up in these gangs and stuff. But, you know, it just, to me, it's a void in society, you know, for boys and girls. And I don't know what the answer is. It breaks my heart that there's not more out there, you know, to help them. And, of course, the facility that I'm talking about, and NASCA is a 501c3, and we accept everybody. You don't have to be Christian. You don't have to be Muslim. It's great if you are. I'm a woman of faith, but NASCA is a 501c3, and we're open to everybody. But this particular facility was a Christian-based facility. You know, it was donations. You know, they saw a need, and they opened up this facility. You know, they got some grants, and then they got, you know, some donations from some of the richer people in the area, and that was pretty much it. You know, so they got some of the food from the food shelters. But there just seems to be a void in society in that aspect, in my opinion. I'm done. I'm on a rant. What are y'all's thoughts?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We do need more support services for boys. We're limited when it comes down to boys. We have a lot of support services for our girls. And I do feel indebted to our boys as well, because, you know, this is not a discriminatory process. Human trafficking doesn't discriminate.
it's not a age and gender bias. You know, there's effects on the human brain, effects on the human body, and at the end of the day, we're talking about, for women, human trafficking is domestic terrorism. Before our children, this is chemical and biological warfare against their bodies and against the generation coming up after them. We can't,
right.
You know, we don't want to keep birthing out children that are, you know, all out of abuse or come from an abusive state, because, you know, by the time they get into places of leadership, we're going to be in a state of unrest just because of their experiences. We're going to be in a state of dictatorship just because of their experiences, just because of not being hurt. We're going to be raising the next generation of imbeciles, and we don't take care of this now, because we know that, you know, still to this day, leadership is a sexual toward, and just because of the Constitution, is leadership is more gravitated toward our men in leadership still. Women are still fighting for those seats and still fighting to be affirmed by seats of leadership and still waiting to be recognized. Here's the reason why we even have human trafficking, because some men still believe that our bodies don't belong to us, that they belong to them. And this is the reason why it's a type of slavery. But even with our men, I mean, could you imagine our men getting into the positions of power who have been victims of sex trafficking, but who are not healed? Could you imagine what that leadership style looks like if there's no deliverance? If there's no way for them to go and lay down how they feel, what they're thinking, for somebody to sit and understand them, and for them to not have a passive-aggressive approach to life, we're looking at, we're waiting for the vicissitudes of life to catch up with political reformation. And if we don't start answering to our boys the same way we answer to our girls, then expect the law, the new world order, to be a whole lot different in the next 10 to 15 years, because we would not do the things it took to affect change. We would not change people's minds so that we could change laws that would protect our children, all of them.
Sad, absolutely.
Amen.
Sad. Cool beans. Let me go back. Forgive me. Let me go back to the studio. Well, we still have Brandy, we have Mark, and we have Dr. Nisi, and I'm Tammy. We did lose Darlene, but boy, did she contribute tonight. So thank you, Darlene, if you're still listening, for contributing to our show. You know, as I make the comment that I feel like there's a void in society, as I said, we don't deal directly with the children in crisis. We're not set up for that. But, you know, if in fact children make it to the adult phase, and a lot of them don't, unfortunately, but if they do make it to the phase of adult, then, you know, they were a broken child. A lot of times they become broken adults. I was a broken adult for a long time. And that's one of the things that NASCA does, is help support adult survivors of child abuse. No matter what kind of child abuse it was, no matter if it just happened once or repeatedly, we're there for you. Anyone who's listening, please know that. Like Mark said earlier, there's a lot of good information on our website, and we are there to support, because you can get past it. You know, I'm a child who was a victim of physical abuse, mental abuse. You know, I was that child that was told I was dumb, stupid, ignorant, couldn't make it. You're worthless. You know, this world would be better off had I never been born, beaten, and then, you know, attempts of sexual abuse by another person in my family. And I survived. And for the longest time, I believed them. I'm dumb. I'm worthless. I'm stupid. And I picked up from it. You know, I got myself, you know, picked myself up, got myself educated. And there is hope. It can be done. We can heal from this. It's not easy. But anyone who's listening, just know that we can heal from this. There's different venues. You know, I've talked about NASCA. A therapist could help somebody. You know, that people, if they can find a good trauma-trained therapist, that can help. If they're not trauma-trained, a therapist is not always the answer. I have never been to a therapist in my life. You know, most of my healing was done through NASCA, my NASCA family. There's support groups. We have one of our members she's in Minnesota. She started a meeting, like a group meeting, where men and women, you know, go to a facility and meet. There's a lot of help out there. So we are wrapping it up. We've got 4 minutes left, and I want to give Dr. Nisi a chance to give some final thoughts. Dr. Nisi, if you want to kind of give a review or anything else that's on your mind, we've got about 4.5 minutes of time left. So I'm going to turn the mic over to you if you don't mind.
Yeah, guys, I hope you all enjoyed today. We got to talk a little bit about foster care and a little bit about how foster care is affecting human trafficking and why it matters. We didn't go into great detail, you guys. We always enjoy listening to the stories and not listening to the stories to rehearse pain. That's what I love about NASCA. We're not here to rehearse pain. I love what NASCA stands for. I love and admire the fact that it's a 501c3. I'm always raising money, you guys, because I'm always needing to do things in the community because I love to affect change where it matters the most. But today I want to take my last 4 minutes and really ask the viewers to sow into NASCA. I know I have friends that are listening to me right now that are like, what is Nisi up to? What is she doing now? And if you guys believe in what it is that I stand for and you believe in who I am because you know who I am, and you know me by my character, even if you just don't know me by my name, you know me by my character. I'm asking you to sow into NASCA, you guys. We put a lot of work into making sure this information gets out to you guys, going into great detail. You guys know I like to explain the law. I love the law. I love the constitutionality of it. You know what I'm going to do the next month's show? I'm going to start bringing out, you know, even if I don't touch up on a little bit of the case law, just talking about how can we do some of these things differently, how can we look at these things from a legalistic approach, because I'm very into that. I want to make sure we all have an understanding of not just the hurt and the abuse, but what can we do about it, what can be done differently, and how our attorneys, our judges that are dealing with the children that are going through these processes, the ones that are listening, how they should feel towards them, how they should be treating them, and how they should respect their process, because this is not an easy process. And sometimes the law doesn't teach you how to manually deal with a human being's feelings and the importance of that and just the care, safety, and control of that. And that's what I like about NASCA, because we talk about that, those things that were left untouched, those things that, you know, went unheard, those things that, you know, like Ms. Darlene said, it just fell on deaf ears. She's talking to her mother, telling her, hey, I have choices and things like that. And for her, that right there, that's rejection. You know, how does it feel to talk to a child who's been dealing with rejection all of their lives? The reason why they even, you know, want to be trafficked. And we haven't even talked about that. Maybe that's something we'll talk about next month. I know that sounds weird, you guys, with some if you've really been in this space for a very long time, such as I have, then you will run into some kids who make a decision to be trafficked. They want to be there. They want to be in this space, and that's what they want to do. But nevertheless, and that is harmful in nature. I never would agree to any child doing that, wanting to perpetuate that or perpetuate that narrative. It's never okay. Please seek help if you feel that way. At least talk to an adult that can give you some sound advice. But I am asking you guys to sow into NASCA. It is a 501c3, and we send out receipts, and we want to. We don't want to save the world. We want to affect change. This is effective leadership on Block Talk Radio, NASCA, the Nisi Hamilton Show, hosted by Miss Tammy. Mr. Mark is on the sound bite. On the ones and twos. I love it. I love it. And we're family.
Well, we love you. We are out of time, Dr. Nisi. I just got the 10-second mark. So thank you. Thank you all for being here. I look forward to your next show, and God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Great show. Amen. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, well, I think.